the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by the Alabama Department of Public Health. Don't wait. Vaccinate. Protect yourself and others against COVID and flu. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM. Here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
He came to Auburn from West Point. Joe Champy had been a successful boys high school basketball coach in Pennsylvania and New York until Army approached him to become their first women's basketball coach. 2 years later, Auburn came calling. In his time at Auburn, Champy was named National Coach of the Year 3 times. He guided the Tigers to 3 straight national championship game appearances, becoming the winningest basketball coach in Auburn history. Champy guided Auburn to 16 NCAA tournament berths, 4 SEC regular season titles, and 4 SEC tournament championships. In 2003, the Tigers won the WNIT title. Joe Champy is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health.
Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast. This is a special Talking Tigers podcast. I've looked forward to this, and we could finally arrange for the sit-down with Auburn's all-time winningest basketball coach, Joe Champy. And we do it here at Midcourt in Beard Eves Coliseum. Boy, there are some memories in this building.
Some ghosts in this cavernous arena, but yeah. What great memories. As I walked in, got a little teary-eyed in terms of what accomplishments. So many young ladies came into this building, believed in the system, were nationally recognized for a long time as one of the best teams in women's college basketball.
When you arrived on the plains from the U.S. Military Academy, did you have any comprehension of what that would become for Auburn, for your career, and for your life?
I'd be lying if I said I did. You look at it, Andy, you come down. I made a choice from West Point, United States Military Academy, to move to an area in the Southeast that high school girls basketball was an important part of the high school curriculum. They played at a great level. They had good coaches, and it was a bid to recruit college players. But we just came in here one day at a time to build a foundation, build a program with athletes, and hopefully find some skilled athletes to be a part of that system.
You had been a highly successful boys high school basketball coach before you made that move to the college ranks at West Point. How did that occur? I mean, that almost seems, at that time, I'm sure that was almost unheard of at that point.
That's true. Yeah. 4 or 5 years in Pennsylvania at Nanticoke High School under a great coach, Syl Baczynski, and as I was looking at some notes yesterday, I found his notes to me on a yellow pad about the 2-3 sliding zone. He played at Penn State with John Igley at Penn State. Outstanding coach. Learned from him the basics, both him and I was coached by Jim Davis at Newport High School, bringing those two together, and his discipline in defending. Took that to Marlboro, New York. Was given the opportunity by another Pennsylvania guy, Nanticoke, Pennsylvania, from Honey Pot, Pennsylvania, John O'Donnell. He was a principal at the time. And he gave me the opportunity to coach the boys' high school team. Walked into that program, and thankfully, they accepted my coaching philosophy, the defense, our matchup defense. And the first year, we won 16 straight games. So it was easy to sell the program when you're winning. And I'll never forget that team. At the point, I had Jeff McCoy at the left wing. I had Dennis Pesavento inside. I had Jimmy Pagano at the four position. I had Mike Mariello. And then my two guard was Charlie Jones.
Charlie Jones.
And he was my best ball player. But it was your Italian heritage, hard-nosed ball players, blue collar. It was up in the apple orchards, 60 miles north of New York City, and 20 miles from West Point.
Yeah. How important was high school basketball in Marlboro, New York?
Well, it was as any place in the Northeast, when you have weather conditions and you don't have many pro teams or college teams, matter of fact. Right. Not pro teams, but college teams. So that high school game was important. I remember when I played, I'm playing a 8 o'clock game, and my mom and dad are going to, leaving at 5 o'clock to get seats in the arena just to play. But it was an important part of their lives.
What did you play growing up competitively?
Fortunate that in high school played all three sports, football, basketball, baseball. Lettered from my sophomore year in those three sports, but started in third grade playing Little League Baseball. So I have a deep feeling for the Little League World Series. As I was mentioning to you earlier, it's just I follow all sports, but you know, I was just a three-sport guy.
What was life like in the Champy household growing up?
Yeah, my dad being superintendent of schools, it's just like Lisa playing for me. There was an extra, you know, criteria of how you behaved off the court or off the field, and then how you handled yourself in the classroom.
Yeah. You once told me that the part of your job at Auburn that you enjoyed the most wasn't necessarily game day or game night. It was practices and the teaching aspect. Did that come from your father, you think?
It came from, yeah, probably my dad, but more so I came from a family on my mother's side. She had two brothers that were coaches. My Uncle Zig was a great baseball coach. And I think more so it came from him in terms of, I played the game for him. He was my head baseball coach in high school. Played for Jim Davis as a basketball, and then football was Walt Sorovich. So from that aspect, picked up things from them. But I always wanted, in terms of being that teacher, and you keep going back to that. I love teaching. I know you've talked to other coaches about that, what was the most important part. Yeah. But when you come onto court and you can be a teacher of the game, just execute the fundamentals at a high rate of speed and hopefully play hard all the time with energy and passion. But more importantly, when you develop a basketball IQ to play smart, you can be a championship team.
The move from high school to West Point to become the first women's basketball coach at Army. How did that come about?
What I was doing in high school, that was 9 years I was in high school, 5 in Pennsylvania and 4 in New York. And I always said to myself, I'm going to give myself 10 years to try to get into the college game. Importantly, you know, Laureen and I had two daughters at the time, Lisa and Dawn, and concerns about, you know, I needed to be a supportive parent and financially be in a position where, you know, teaching and coaching was a priority. And talked to a few people. That's when Coach K started at West Point, looked at becoming a GA, looking at becoming, staying where I was as a high school coach. But the offer at West Point to coach excited me in terms of a collegiate opportunity, an opportunity to be at one of the most outstanding academic and military institutions in the world, and having the opportunity to coach good people. So, and financially, it was a big salary. It was like $17,000 in 1976.
Was there any hesitance at all about moving from high school boys to collegiate women?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. In terms of being accepted, trying to understand their ability to play the game. Never paid attention except for Lisa and Don, and their participation, I think they really helped me in determining, because they were good athletes, in determining that, okay, I could go to this level. The conversation I had with Coach Lou Carnesecca, who was at St. John's at the time, and we had many good summers together. I was involved at the New York Military Academy, which was right outside of Marlboro, and great coaches came by. Coach Knight, Digger Phelps was in Beacon, New York, which was 6 miles up the road. Coach Carnesecca, Bill Rafferty at Seton Hall at the time, came up and spoke with us. And I was surrounded by great coaches, but great people. And then we're talking with Coach Carnesecca, and I would never go to Coach Knight and say, hey, what do you think about this situation? Or Digger was a little bit closer of understanding as I was growing up and deciding to go to the women's game. Coach Carnesecca just said, you know, look at the game. Can you coach your system with them? And once you decide, you can't go back. And that sort of got me thinking a little bit. But then when I looked at the players and saw what I had in terms of when you're accepted at the academy, you're going to be a great athlete. If you're going to play a sport, hopefully you'll be skilled in basketball, but you're going to be a great athlete. And that's what we had. We had only freshmen and sophomores playing a varsity schedule at West Point.
How successful were you?
First year, I think we were 19-10. And then the second year, I think we were something like 22, 23 games, and we made it to the, at that time it was AIAW, to the New York State Championship.
Your last season at Auburn, you took the team back to West Point. Now, at the time, it wasn't public that this was going to be your last season. Right. What did that mean to stay at the Thayer Hotel, on base, have the kids take a tour, a guided tour of West Point, and play there? Right. What did that mean to you?
Well, it meant the world. I mean, that's how I scheduled it in terms of going back, you know, your roots, where you started from, and you give, I give West Point, you know, much of the credit for my success in coaching, because the one thing I learned through my leadership was you had to make players accountable. One, you had to make them accountable. Two, you had to confront issues. And three, you put yourself in a place where you always believed you could get the job done.
Without West Point, do you ever come to Auburn?
I don't think so, because of the time and place. And, you know, reflecting back on that visit we made, we were surrounded by some great people. We stay at the Hotel Thayer, which is a museum of leadership throughout the time span of military leaders and wars and how they led. But Billy Shutsky was there for us, who was the outstanding rebounder for Bobby Knight's team at the time. Billy set up the tour for us. Mm. How ironic was it that the day before the game that I spoke to the Army women's team to give them a pep talk to kick our ass?
You gave the staff the choice of going to the city or staying on base and taking the tour. I had been to New York City before. I wanted that tour that day, and it was fascinating to me. It was just fascinating. Just from a history.
Yeah, just from
standpoint.
A history. If you enjoyed history, even if you didn't enjoy history, you would become a history buff after that experience. And I appreciate you doing that. But it was special, and the people that took the tour, you know, repeated what you've just said. The cathedral that we went into, the mess hall where they feed 4,000 cadets in 30 minutes. And just walking, you walked in footsteps of great leadership.
Right. Who was the person that contacted you about Auburn University?
Joanna Davenport. Mm. Joanna was a visiting professor at West Point at the time. On occasion, I guess, she saw us play. We played on a court that was on the fourth floor in the, we practiced up there and played our games at in that gymnasium. We had some great success. Once again, my teams at West Point, size-wise, there's nobody above 6 foot. Hard-nosed kids that played great team basketball. But what I learned from that coaching experience was that you had to put them in a position. Realize now, cadets at that time, the average amount of sleep they were getting was 4 hours as plebes. And I was coaching the plebes and sophomores. And so from that standpoint, to keep them alert, I had to reduce practice time, but we did everything with a purpose. I explained to them why we were doing this drill, the acceptance of the drill defensively and offensively. We never wasted time about just doing a drill, just to do a drill. It was an offensive, defensive, and we always made it competitive. What do I mean by that? You had winners and losers. It might have been time-related, goal-related, or peer-related. In other words, okay, team, we're going 5-on-5. Gold has the ball, possession up on top, run on rebounds and steals. It's make it take, just like you do on a playground, but five possessions. And we're going to keep score. And we're going to chart who's going to take the shots. Because it's got to be a carryover from what you do in practice, how you play the game, what's your basketball IQ, to what you're going to do in a regular game. So you had to develop that quick twitch. You know, basketball is a game of explosive stops and starts. So you had to develop that quick twitch, not only playing, but thinking also. And that's, they made me better by making me coach a different way.
As you were doing that, you were looking on the court, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I mean, you were looking at where this was going to happen.
I know where this was supposed to be. Right. Yeah. And at that time, we didn't have the three-point line, but we right. still defended. We always loaded up on help side. We always wanted to take away the inside and be a great rebounding team, put great ball pressure on that the good shooters, but rebound the heck out of it and run. And you had to convince your team that, okay, let's look at these five players. Well, who can score for them? Is it one player, two players, three? Well, we can have the advantage. We can play 5-on-3. But you had to load up. If I'm not playing you, how excited? If I'm playing you on the ball, I'm excited. But when you pass that ball, how excited am I now? And that's what you had to convince those players. You had to jump to the ball, see the ball, be in a position where you could see the ball, guard the ball, and be a great help defender. And then when that shot went up, you know, so many coaches talk about boxing out. That's only one part of it. You have to secure the ball. So we would say, hey, hit and go to the ball and secure the ball. Those are beliefs that I had fundamentally, how to play the game defensively, and then put yourself in a position that defensively, we're a really good team. And when we get consecutive defensive stops, we can beat anybody.
War Eagle, it's a great day for Auburn Tigers to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccinations during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It's crucial that we take steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are all up to date on all recommended vaccines, including COVID-19 and flu. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
Where did the matchup zone come from?
Sil Bozinski, back in Pennsylvania. He played at Penn State himself. Had family, Kevin Trainer, who played for Jack Kraft at Villanova, close by, and married my cousin Trudy. He played with Billy Melchione and played in the Big Five. So you had Harry Litwack at Temple, who had his 3-2 matchup. You had Jack Kraft with his 1-2-2 matchup. And Jack Kraft took his team, I think, in 68 all the way to the Final Four and was beaten by Coach Wooden at UCLA. Well, everybody was beaten by Coach right. Wooden at that time. But that's it came in, you know, as a high school player, our seniors or our basketball trip, we would go to the Palestra. And see the doubleheader, see St. Joe's play Villanova, see Temple play LaSalle. I'll never forget the one game we went to. We're all excited. And what happens? The Wildcat from Villanova and the hog from St. Joe's got into a little tussle, and they were both handcuffed and left the arena, left the palestra. But fun times, you know, good times with basketball and watching the game grow and being part of the growth of the game. I developed a love for the defensive concepts because as a defensive coach, I became a multiple defensive discipline. In other words, I felt I could make more changes defensively than you could offensively. That's what I felt. Mm-hmm. But if I couldn't convince those kids on the sidelines to do it my way, but fortunately they bought into it and we accomplished a lot of great things with the matchup defense that we extended not only in the half court, but in the three-quarter court and full court defensively.
Who is the first transformational recruit for you at Auburn?
That's easy. Becky Jackson.
Yeah.
Becky was a athlete with great hand and eye coordination, good feet, had a skill to score, and fortunately she came to us. But more than all of that, she had that competitive edge, that desire to win in every drill. And she brought a toughness to us. And she made me better defensively because she was a rim protector. Mm. And she had the intelligence to stay inside. You can ask people to do it, but when the lights go on, will they do it? And Becky accomplished that. She made us a team of defensively, we protected the lane. We didn't give you anything easy in terms of your offensive game.
I think your second year she comes in, you won an SEC tournament championship.
That's right.
And you're number two.
With Becky, and I got to give credit, you know, she was the force, the one recruit, but I say this all the time, Angie Hanna and Renee Halbrooks, my captains, from the previous teams, come in as sophomores, and they give me leadership there, but Becky gives me that toughness on the inside, and Angie was a great scorer for us, and Renee, we had her play point guard, even though she didn't want to, because defensively, I felt at the time, with her size at 5'8", 5'9", she could take away, you know, the inside look. We always preached, take away the eyes of the basketball. What does the basketball see? We wanted to permit them to see, you know, the sidelines, but we didn't want to let them see the paint. We didn't want to let them see inside, and that's how we defended. Head on the ball.
All right, let's talk about then that from that time through the 80s. I mean, there's just a steady progression for Auburn on a national level that culminates with three straight national championship games. What was the key to that? What was the key to that build for the Tigers at the time, the Lady Tigers?
Right.
In the 80s.
Well, it was the system. You came in, you fit in to a system defensively, and I haven't mentioned offensively to get into flow, but there's five ways you score offensively, and what we looked at, you brought people in. Helen Baruti, outstanding point guard for us. Prior to that, you looked at with Becky and Renee, and Angie, and then you follow up. You know, you had Beth Bryant in there. You had kids that brought some toughness, brought some belief in the system. But the system was defensive pressure the ball, take away inside passing lanes, and permit one shot and done for them. And then offensively, one, you wanted to turn them over and get fast break baskets. Two, you wanted to bring the ball up the court and get a secondary offense. We felt as a team, we were better, we were quicker as five people than you were with five people because we had running endurance, we had jumping endurance. And people don't talk about jumping endurance. To me, you can talk about vertical jump. Yeah, he gets up 36 inches. Yeah, but how many times does he do it?
Right.
We were more like the Larry Bird. Larry Bird got off the floor 6 inches, but he did it multiple times to get the ball. And that's what we were. And then offensively, we tried to sprint the floor, get into a secondary break. Then if not, we were going to get into a game where we wanted inside touches. Now that's easy for me to say, but we sold that to the team. And when you have a Vicky Orr coming in, and she was the second biggest recruit.
Right.
But you had a young lady by Brenda Hill at 6'2", a great guard for us. Charlene Thomas was in that mix. Then you had Ruthie and Mayola Bolton. And then Diane McNeil and Sharon Stewart from, you know, all our Mississippi kids coming in and playing at a level. Chris McDonald, little lefty that could shoot it for us. But you had players that said, hey, you know, Champion system, you know, we're finding success. He gives me freedom offensively to play instinctive, to be creative. And then defensively, if I want to get some minutes, I got to play his defense.
Right.
So it's probably the most underrated part of coaching is that ability to motivate and have people believe in who you are. My best team was 87. With Helen Baroudi, you had Vicky Orr, you had Diane McNeil, you had Sharon Stewart, Joycelyn McGilberry, you know, Ruthie and Mayola. We were 10 strong in terms of who we could be. But our one stumbling block was that team up north in Knoxville that we always had to go through, but on their floor. It was a tough road for us in terms of who we were and what we were trying to do to be a championship team. The building of those teams and then go to three straight Final Fours and go to the championship game. What a different cast of characters, especially that 90 team. And they talk about recognition. You know, at the time that you're playing, you really don't know how much success you've developed. But in the history of women's basketball now, to go to three Final Fours, we were special.
Those three Final Fours, Louisiana Tech plays a major part in all three.
Yes,
in the first
do.
Final Four, it's the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the semifinals in 89 and 90.
In 90, yeah.
I mean, Louisiana Tech with Leon Barmore as the head coach eventually there. It's interesting how those teams continued. For a while, it was Ole Miss.
That's right.
Tennessee, obviously. Yeah. Georgia with Andy Landers. But when it came to the postseason, it always seemed like, at least the last part of the 80s and that first year of the 90s, it was La Tech for you.
That's true. But, you know, we talk about them. But for us, from 87 to, like, 92, we just had a run of people coming together, believing in our system, and playing so hard. And I look back and I reflect, well, we worked so hard in practice. Those young people that weren't on the starting five or didn't get the minutes, they worked so hard in practice. It was player development all over again,
right?
Because when it became their opportunity, they became successful, and they had a trust in themselves that they understood it was we, not me, that was going to provide that championship success. And we were fortunate to be surrounded by some great, great players.
You had your share of success in the SEC basketball tournament. But the one that I will never forget is 1997 at the Roundhouse in Chattanooga. And that's an Auburn team that loses to Ole Miss in the final game of the regular season. And that game kind of takes Auburn out of contention for the NCAA tournament. And then you get Ole Miss in the first round of the SEC tournament. And you're down in the second half of that game. And I'll be honest with you, I was sitting there calling that game in Chattanooga, and I was already starting to think about, well, I'll now transition to baseball. And you come back and win that game.
Yeah.
Then you get Georgia in the second round, and Georgia had dominated Auburn, had won the regular season championship, had dominated Auburn in the regular season.
It dominated everybody,
yes.
Not just Auburn.
Yeah. And you beat Georgia. And there's Tennessee. There's that team from up north in Tennessee. In the semifinals.
Yeah.
And you win, not at a buzzer beater, but a last second shot.
Yeah.
then that team doesn't lose for 3 years, that Tennessee squad.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you get Florida, and a former assistant coach of yours is now coaching at Florida in the championship game. It's the first time in women's basketball history in the SEC that a team wins four games in 4 days.
Against three top 10 teams.
Against four teams you had lost to in the regular season.
Thank you for reminding me. But yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
You always dressed so very well. How many suits and ties did you take to Chattanooga?
Not many. Not many. One suit, one tie. And you know my tradition. If I'm winning, that tie is staying on. That tie is going in, and that coat. And how many suits did you take?
I took one tie.
One tie, okay.
I took one tie, and I wore it four straight days.
You and me both.
Yes.
But the thing is, what a special time of putting a team together. And I've told this story many times. We would do a self-improvement clinic over in Columbus at Columbus State with Herbert Green. Sonny would be there, Mac McCarthy, Eddie Fogler, Whip Sanderson, and we'd all share ideas and thoughts. And the one thing that I remember about going to the SEC tournament is Wimp said he would design a special offense and play for the ring, play for the ring. And that's what we did. We went in, it's the number one offense that I run, and we called it. We had Tisa Morris up on top. Because of the pressure that Ole Miss would bring in Georgia and Tennessee, I decided to enter the ball by a dribble entry. I had Tiffany Krantz come down the right side of the floor. I had Tisa up on top. If we had to, we would hit her, but we had a run off of Tara Williams right at the ball side elbow. Old UCLA cut. We got the dribble. She'd cut down if she posted up. And Tisa was a girl at 5'11", 6', good upper body strength. We'd let her catch and post up. If we didn't have that, Tiff would pull back her dribble, and here would come Tara out on a three-point line and set on the ball screen play, a two-man game, as Tisa went the backside with the double screen down on the other side with Tamika Slade, Justina Bonten at the time was there, but Tanya Trail was my rebounder and defender, and we all played roles on the team, so we ran that, but nobody could match up with Tara because she was only 6', but with her quickness. First half, we stayed in the game, and second half, they're, what are we going with? I said, we're going with one. We stayed in it because Ole Miss, Georgia, they always wanted to deny that first pass and disrupt you. Well, they couldn't disrupt us because we entered the ball in the wing just by the dribble down. So that was the one key was taken away. We did it with a dribble entry, and the kids believed in it, and you know, we beat Ole Miss, and Georgia wasn't even ready for us at all.
Right.
And then Tennessee, I remember Tisa taking a ball down the right side with 5 seconds to go.
Baseline right.
Off the UCLA high cut, she catches it down there and she knocks it down. The key to all that offense was the dribble entry, but then on the weak side, you had Tanya Trail, you had Justina Bonten rebounding that ball, and Tisa coming around and running down the middle, rebounding. So we had a system that was working and they were believing it, and we beat Tennessee with Kelly Jolly as their point guard, and they go on to win.
Yes, they do.
The championship this year. After beating Florida with their twin towers, it was a game of, you know, for us, just we played slow because of 4 days. We never practiced. We never went to shoot around. We worked out at the Hampton Inn up in the outside of Chattanooga. It was more a mental watch film and get a plan. How we were going to defend, just grow into the game, and we beat a good Florida team. And then for all that great success, I know you were upset. We were upset. We, you know, the ironic thing about who we were at Auburn, we never got the respect, I think, from the NCAA, from the selection committee.
Right.
We either went to Tennessee or to Louisiana Tech. And why? We were as good as anybody in the country. We just didn't buy NCAA tournament, you know, first round games.
Right.
We could have had a little bit more success, but so proud of what we accomplished. And the one thing I want to say, they talk about statues, about having statues, and just read or just saw where Aubie, very deserving, had a statue. I would like to think in terms of what those three Final Four teams did. We don't need one statue. We need just a statue of a team, of a Vicky Orr, a Ruthie Bolton, a Carolyn Jones, who I didn't mention, a Linda Godby, five or six of those kids just together, yeah, and show them what they did to bring such, as we get older, what great success they had and what recognition they had nationally. They get more recognition nationally than we give them here in Auburn.
We, not me.
That's true. Right. You might be able to play for me.
Thank you for your time. It's always fun to sit back and to reminisce and to talk about what is a Hall of Fame career for Joe Champy. Thank you.
You bring out some good memories. So if you were a drinker, we could do this more often.
War Eagle, Joe.
War Eagle.
For Joe Champy and the Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.